most unlikely escapades. As the lights that frighten fade, till the dawn drags into dead blue. I'd rather stay far from the cruel colored day. Leave me in my monochrome.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Real vinyl.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Whoa! Welcome to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire, here with you once again. We've got a phenomenal show coming up today. Obviously, we've got to talk about Trump's lawsuit against the DOJ and the revelation that there were 700 pages of classified documents retrieved so far this year from Mar-a-Lago. We've got two of the individuals who were plotting to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan. They have been convicted. We've got Don Jr. excusing his father's actions. We've got Alex Jones walking back his endorsement of Ron DeSantis. All kinds of things coming up on today's show. So let's jump right in. Obviously, one of the bigger things that happened early this week is the fact that Donald Trump not only filed a lawsuit against the DOJ seeking a special master to go through the documents, make sure there's nothing privileged in there. But also in the filing, it appears that his lawyers actually admitted that he did the things that, of course, he is being accused of. Right here, twice in the document, meaning the, you know, lawsuit and the other documents that have come to light, Trump admits he took government documents, which is illegal under the Espionage Act and the Presidential Records Act. Huh. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I work with lawyers. I am the editor of a legal magazine. But I gotta tell you, usually when lawyers file motions, they don't admit to the crimes that their clients have been accused of. And yet right there, clear as day, there's two separate times where his lawyers admit, yes, we had the documents. The FBI at one point told us to secure them a little bit better. So Donald Trump said, put a second lock on the door. That's in the document. And then, of course, they admitted it again when they said if the FBI, you know, all they had to do was come ask, we would have, you know, given them the things that they were after. So you're admitting he did it. And we know from last week, of course, that reports came out saying Donald Trump is unable to attract decent lawyers. One, because they don't want to tie their name to it, because they know how unpredictable Trump is. And if he does something stupid, the lawyer gets blamed for it. They don't want to be a part of that. And also, they're afraid they're never going to get paid if they do legal work for him. So Donald Trump, of course, is left with what I like to call the bottom of the barrel. Not, you know what? That's not even fair to barrels, okay? These are not lawyers from the bottom of the barrel. He had to tip the barrel over and dig down a couple of feet to find legal minds horrible enough to admit in their own filings that, yeah, I mean, he did it, but is it always bad if he does it? Is it always a crime? But all that aside, the lawsuit itself, depending on who you ask, is either going to succeed or fail. And I know that's a very weird thing to say, but again, it depends on which legal expert you're talking to, you're reading, or you're seeing, you know, their massive threads on Twitter explaining this, because everybody seems to have a different thought on what is happening here. A lot of them say that this lawsuit, well, pretty much all of them say the lawsuit is just an effort to stall, right? That's a given. We understand that. He's stalling. The real question becomes whether or not the lawsuit itself can be successful. That's where the divide happens. Because some legal experts, and I'm talking about all the people, these are all people on the left, some say it's an absolute farce and it has no chance of being successful because the special master would be appointed if they believed some of the retrieved materials, 700 pages of classified documents, were privileged. And that is where another dichotomy breaks down. So if it's attorney-client privilege, then a special master would, in this particular instance, be warranted under most circumstances. Not necessarily all, right? If they're documents that Trump and his lawyer are discussing committing crimes together outside of what he's being represented for, then no, that would not fall under attorney-client privilege. If it is Donald Trump communicating with his lawyer about legal actions, things like that, that is privileged. You can't have those. The other kind of privilege is executive privilege, which, of course, we have heard Donald Trump say some of these things are executive privilege. And that's not going to fly. You're not going to get a special master because you say these things are covered under executive privilege. There's one person on the planet who has the authority to determine whether or not something is covered under executive privilege. That person right now is President Joe Biden. So if Biden were to come out and say none of these are executive privilege, then guess what? None of them are executive privilege. If he doesn't do that, and Trump did claim privilege over some of them, they would still have that executive privilege distinction until the next person in line, whoever that president will be, if it's Biden now or anybody else down the road, takes it away. That's how the executive privilege works. Once it's there, it is there, and it can transfer from administration to administration. But once you leave office, it's out of your control. So if the next person in line says, no, it's not covered, then it's not covered. And then, of course, you would not get a special master. Having said all of that, let me say this, because again, depending on what kind of privilege, it may or may not take effect. Depending on what's in the privilege, it may or may not take effect. Any of that, I don't care. I'm in favor of the special master. And there's one very specific, and I feel it's a good reason, for everybody to say, you know what, we'll do the special master thing. Give Trump what he wants right now. Because he's making a big deal of this. So if he gets that special master, all of his followers are going to look at it and say, okay, good, we have oversight. And then, if you find the crimes, you know, having the documents themselves was the crime. If you find it is what you think it is and you can indict him, having that special master there, it's not going to convince Trump. He'll then attack the special master. It's not going to convince the MAGA hat wearing crowd that everything was legitimate. But what it will do is it will convince all of those Republicans who are right now on the fence. They don't know whether or not to support what's happening or to be against it. Those are the people that are going to say, well, there was a special master. They had the oversight. They gave Trump what he wanted, and it still came to that conclusion. So I guess this was real. I guess this was legitimate. I'm not even saying, folks, that you're going to have a large number of people who do that. But even if you have a handful of them, that's more than you've got right now. So why not just do it? Yeah, is it going to slow things down a little bit? Sure. But if you go ahead and agree and give in to the demands of this lawsuit, which I am typically against giving in to any demands of these right-wingers, but if you do it now, you're going to avoid a lengthy court process where nothing's going to be able to happen in the interim. So agree to it today, get the special master, then start going through the documents. You save yourself a lot of time that way. Trump doesn't get to stall it, but for more than, what, a week, and he gets what he wants, and some folks out there might view this a little bit more legitimately than they already were. That's why I think the special master is a good idea. I do think it's something that the DOJ needs to entertain. It's not obviously out of the realm of possibility. It happens all the time in criminal investigations. Just do it. Give this thing even more legitimacy, is what I say. Take away one of Donald Trump's biggest talking points. He'll still use it, but it's not going to be as effective against as many people if he just do what he wants right now and reap the benefits later. But the DOJ may have other things that they have in mind as well. Because according to reports out this week, the DOJ is also seeking more surveillance footage from Mar-a-Lago. Now, as we all know, the DOJ already has their hands on some of the surveillance footage from Mar-a-Lago. And in fact, it was getting that surveillance footage that kind of expedited the need for the FBI to go down there and seize all these documents to begin with. And now reports say the DOJ needs even more. They want more. And that can only mean one thing, according to the experts. That one thing, of course, is that they didn't get it all. That there could be more documents hiding down there in Mar-a-Lago, or maybe they were loaded up and taken somewhere else, so that when the FBI showed up, some of the even worse stuff that Trump may have stolen wasn't even on site, and they didn't know that he had moved it. That's why they want that surveillance footage. At least that's the prevailing theory. Honestly, makes a heck of a lot of sense. These DOJ investigators are not doing this willy-nilly, right? They're not flying by the seat of their pants. They're making sure that they have crossed their T's, that they have dotted their I's, and that they have the evidence to back up any claim or request that they make, because they understand the political ramifications of going after a former president, especially one with a cult following like Donald Trump, especially one whose followers are out there right now making death threats against the very people doing these investigations. And they're looking at all that, and they're looking at their evidence, and they're saying, you know what? We need more. So for them to even think that right now tells me they have what they believe, I think, is pretty strong evidence that they don't have all of the evidence. And that's a terrifying thought in and of itself, right? Trump could be hiding even more documents. There could be more than just the 700 pages of classified information, some of it, again, pertaining to nuclear documents. I'd say that's worth a look through the footage, right? I think that's something maybe we ought to be looking into. It remains to be seen, of course. They have not officially made the request for that extra surveillance footage. It could be coming any day now. We have to wait and see. And that honestly is always the hardest part, right? Especially with Donald Trump. We have to be patient. Just like we have to be patient with the January 6th hearings. We have to be patient with the New York investigations and the Georgia investigation and the lawsuits about him possibly inciting the riot, causing the injuries to the police officers, and the E. Jean Carroll defamation lawsuit, which honestly still to me, in my opinion, is the biggest one out there because of what it could prove about Donald Trump if he ever gives that DNA sample. So there's a lot of things, which means we got to have a lot of patience. And that's not always easy, but that's the position that we are in right now. I am Farron Cousins. For more from me, by the way, you can follow me on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. You can also follow my other YouTube channel at youtube.com/FarronBalanced. And I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at FarronBalanced. This is the David Pakman Show. I'm Farron Cousins, in for David Pakman, and we'll be right back with more. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire, sitting in for David Pakman once again today. You know, we've already talked a lot about Donald Trump, the documents, Mar-a-Lago, the investigation, and all that. And I don't want to continue talking about that, even though that is dominating the news, making it harder to find any stories. But there's one more thing I got to talk about with it. And that one more thing is Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr. On Monday, Donald Trump Jr. came down to my city of Pensacola, Florida, to campaign, of course, for Republican candidate Matt Gaetz, which Gaetz didn't really need it. He was going to win the primary easily. But Jr. comes down, brings Kimberly Guilfoyle with him. They do an event. And it was during this event that Jr. started talking about the investigation into the documents and all that stuff stored down there at Mar-a-Lago. And Jr. not only defended his father, but said that if he had, you know what, I'm not going to give it away. I'm going to read the quote. This is what Donald Trump Jr. said in Pensacola, Florida on Monday. By the way, for the record, which, okay, you don't have to put both of those qualifiers in there. You would either say by the way or for the record, but you don't need to say by the way for the record. Just a little grammar lesson there for everybody. By the way, for the record, I'd say that if Donald Trump actually still had the nuclear codes, it'd probably be good. our enemies might actually be like, okay, maybe let's not mess with them. Unlike when they look at Joe Biden and they say, you know what? We should attack now. See, I was unaware, and maybe it's because of my sleepy little town, but I was unaware that foreign leaders were actually out there saying, let's go attack America right now. Have there been attacks? Like, does it happen while I'm sleeping and then nobody tweets about it so I don't see it the next day? Or is he just making stuff up because he's a moron? I'm going to go with the latter on that one, by the way. here's the other part of his incredibly stupid statement. If Donald Trump still had nuclear codes in those documents, well, guess what? They would no longer be valid. I can promise you they've probably changed the codes multiple times since Donald Trump left office. But even assuming they hadn't, right? Let's indulge Junior's little fantasy here. Assuming they had not changed the nuclear codes and Donald Trump did have them, he still couldn't issue a nuclear strike, and the rest of the world knows that because he's not the president of the United States. Does Junior think that anybody with those nuclear codes is just able to order a nuclear strike? I mean, I guess if you did a good enough, you know, Biden impression and you had the nuclear codes, you might be able to do something like that. But just having the codes in and of themselves doesn't give you the authority to launch nuclear weapons. So again, not 100% sure exactly what Junior is trying to tell us here, but I can tell you that everything he says is completely false. Like, one, we don't have world leaders sitting around like, oh, Trump's gone, great, let's go fire missiles at America, because apparently what, Trump took the entire military with him? is it just gone now? Like, we didn't just give them $800 billion for the next 12 months? Did I make all that up? Was that all just a fevered dream that I had? No, the military is still there. We still have all the weapons that we had when Trump was there, if not more at this point, obviously, because we just pick more up every year. So, yeah, the rest of the world still knows that no matter who's in charge of the White House, we can still do some pretty significant damage to them if they were to come over here and attack us. So, no matter which way you slice Junior's little weird fantasy there of trying to defend his father's behavior, it makes no sense. And trust me, I've been trying to make sense of it for quite some time, and dang it, I simply cannot do it. And speaking of things that also make absolutely no sense whatsoever, new reports have revealed that ICE officials were instructed by the Trump administration to wipe their cell phones before he left office. So prior to January 20th of 2021, we have ICE officials, it has now been confirmed, of course, that deleted all of the data off of their phones. Just like we saw with members of the Department of Justice, members of the Department of Homeland Security, and of course, most famously, the United States Secret Service. Everybody just wiped all their phones, deleted everything off it, text messages, emails, notes, games, whatever it was, totally erased it all. And even if, just like the Secret Service claimed, right, oh, this was just routine, this is a thing we do. Cool, totally understand that. You're still required by law to preserve the data. And that's the big part that I think a lot of people don't quite understand about this. It is not routine for the DOJ, for the Homeland Security, for the Secret Service to just wipe everything off the phone and turn it back in and say, all right, thank you, bye, I'll see you next time. No, the phones are taken, inventory is done, they are copied, and then they are wiped. And this, of course, only applies to agency-issued phones, which most of these people do have agency-issued phones. And they have it for that specific reason, so that the data is saved, so that there are records of the things that they do, the communications that they have. so that they can make sure these individuals are not sending it to people who shouldn't be receiving it. And in case there's any malfeasance, we can point it out due to the records on their devices. And now we know that ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, wiped their phones just like so many other government agencies under Donald Trump. I don't know how much more of this we can go through. How many more cell phones were wiped before Trump left? How many other agencies, how many other officials were given these orders to scrub it all, to get rid of any evidence, get rid of any trace of anything, make sure nobody knows who we were talking to and when we were talking to them and what we were talking to them about? That should terrify you. And every single person involved needs to be investigated because, like I said, it's illegal to delete these records. They are required by law to back them up. And I'm not saying go find the IT department and arrest those guys for wiping the devices. They probably didn't know that they hadn't been backed up. Whoever made the call, whoever made the decision for all of these devices to be wiped at whatever agency it is we're talking about that day, those are the people that need to be held accountable. And maybe there's a couple honest folks in there. Maybe some of them backed up their own data. Maybe they understood that I was just following orders is not necessarily a good excuse for breaking the law. So maybe there are records somewhere, right? Even in the case of the Secret Service and all their missing cell phone data, once the investigation was lost, they came back and magically said, oh, wait, we just found data on 10 devices. Look at that. Wow. Whoa, suddenly it's crazy. We may be looking at a situation like that, but only if we put the pressure on these organizations. And that pressure has to either come from Congress or it has to come from the Biden administration via the Department of Justice. That's what has to happen. Remains to be seen, though, right? I guess we have to wait. And another thing, by the way, and I just thought this was so, just such a wonderful story. Last week, Alex Jones came out, did a video where he told his audience that he was officially endorsing Florida Governor Ron DeSantis for president over Donald Trump. He not only said that Ron DeSantis was, in Jones's words, way better than Trump, way better than Trump. His exact words. He also said that DeSantis is the kind of guy that what Trump should be like. Again, his exact words. What Trump should be like. That was last week. Now, earlier this week, Alex Jones realized, oh no, I've made a mistake and I've made the big guy angry. Even though, as far as I've seen, Donald Trump has not issued any statements whatsoever attacking Alex Jones for that. So I don't buy for a second Alex Jones's, oh no, Trump's angry. He didn't say anything. Didn't seem like he cared. But anyway, Alex Jones comes out this week in what's called an emergency warning. And he says this, not a warning out of any desire to hurt you, Mr. Trump, but to save your important legacy and hopefully ensure you can get back into the White House coming up in 2024. We know the election was stolen. We know the deep state is trying to set you up in any way they can. We understand you are a lion surrounded by hyenas. So this is my emergency message to you, Mr. President, to go and actually watch the first 30 minutes of Thursday's show so you can see what I said in context. The corporate media edited it down to a 30-second clip to make it sound like I'm only for DeSantis and that I've abandoned you. That's not true. It's the contrary. Right. That's totally believable. I mean, it's not like you just got popped for $40 million for lying. So yes, we totally believe that the clip we all saw with our own eyes, heard it with our own ears, processed it with our own brains, was totally just fabricated. The media made it up. They deceptively edited it. Nah, you're on video literally saying Ron DeSantis is way better than Donald Trump. This is what Trump should be like. You said that you can look in DeSantis's eyes. Here it is. I don't just watch a man's actions, as Christ said. Judge a tree by its fruit. I can also look in his eyes on HD video and I see the real sincerity. Is that taken out of context? With you talking about how much you just love Ron DeSantis over Donald Trump, you also said that you're no longer, you know, going to pigheadedly, that's the word you used, support Donald Trump. But again, this little begging for forgiveness thing for Donald Trump, I don't buy it because Trump didn't say a word. I don't know that Trump was mad about it. I don't know that Trump knew it happened. You know, we know Trump sits and watches TV all day long, but I don't know that he's sitting there and watching Alex Jones. So I think what happened is that Jones realized he made a lot of his Trump-supporting audience mad. So that little emergency warning he issued, that wasn't to make Donald Trump happy. That was to make Jones's audience happy by trying to convince them that what he said last week totally never happened. I am Farron Cousins, in for David Pakman. You can get more from me on YouTube at youtube.com/FarronBalanced and youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at FarronBalanced. This is The David Pakman Show. I'm Farron Cousins, in for David Pakman, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to The David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire, sitting in for David Pakman today. And what do you say, folks? You ready for some non-Donald Trump news? Because I know I sure am. So let's start with this. Two individuals, Adam Fox and Barry Croft, are now facing a maximum of life in prison after a jury convicted them this week in their plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Now, this plot, I'm sure most people understand and remember what happened, but just in case you didn't, you had these individuals, along with several other right-wing extremists, that became so angry about Governor Whitmer's COVID restrictions that they began plotting, and the FBI actually had an informant within their little group, a guy called Big Dan. Big Dan is in there in their little extremist group where they're plotting to go and kidnap Governor Whitmer from her vacation home. And they had their weapons. They were practicing with explosives. And that's also, by the way, another charge that they received. But they were going to do this. They were going to overthrow the government of the state of Michigan through this kidnapping plot. This is actually the second time these two men had been on trial. The first one resulted in a mistrial because the jury obviously could not come to any unanimous decision, and the defense had done a fairly successful job of arguing, at least successful in terms of the jury being hung there, of convincing them that the FBI set up basically entrapment for these individuals. The FBI guy, Big Dan, Let's not disrespect Big Dan by calling him anything else. Big Dan, basically working for the FBI, convinced these men to do it, right? If Big Dan hadn't been there pulling the little puppet strings, they never would have thought about kidnapping Governor Whitmer. But this time around, of course, the jury said, nah, you are not making a convincing case that Big Dan is the guy responsible for this. So they got convicted again. They're facing life in prison, as their sentence at a maximum. Now, here's what drives me insane about this particular story. These men wanted to kidnap and most likely kill a democratically elected governor because of COVID restrictions. That's what this was over. That's what this was about. And yes, these individuals had, you know, expressed anti-government sentiment on social media for years, which is one of the reasons that the jury this time didn't buy the FBI entrapment argument. But this was the last straw. Like, how dare you try to take care of people during a public health emergency, the likes of which we have never seen in modern America? How dare you tell us to wear masks? How dare you tell us that we have to socially distance. I'm going to kill you because you don't want me to die. Because let's be honest, that's what this was. That's what COVID restrictions were. And we saw it across the country, not kidnapping plots, thank God. But we saw these lunatics burning masks, getting children to throw masks into burning trash cans, protesting over the fact that we don't want you to die. But apparently that's a bridge too far for these freaks. Like, you can't want to take care of them. You can't want to protect them, because if you do, they may try to kill you. Can you wrap your heads around that for just a moment, folks? That's where we're at. That's what we have come to. And of course, we're acting like COVID's not still out there killing a couple thousand people a week in this country, which it is. We don't have any restrictions anywhere anymore. You're free to do whatever, but you're assuming the risks. And we still have people out there trashing vaccines, posting misinformation, ranting and raving about non-existent COVID protection measures, because again, they don't exist anywhere anymore. But they're still mad. They're still protesting. They're still acting like, oh my God, this is terrible. This is tyranny. All because some lawmakers, not even all of them, but just some of them, actually wanted to protect their constituents and not let them die from a deadly disease, which at the time of the kidnapping plot, we had no treatments for. We had no vaccines for. We had no way to protect ourselves other than wearing the masks and socially distancing and avoiding unnecessarily large gatherings. That's all we could do. We didn't have the Paxlovid pills. We didn't have vaccines, as I said. We had nothing. We were throwing the spaghetti against the wall when it came to treatment. That's why so many people died. But I guess that's what these, you know, extremists would have preferred. Let me die. I'd rather die than have to wear a mask. I'd rather kidnap the governor of a state than not be able to go to Chili's for drinks after work on Friday. That is, unfortunately, the country that we live in today. And of course, the misinformation that was flowing during COVID has not slowed down. In fact, it has gotten worse. According to a new report from M. Booth Health, a study called the Pharma Brandemic, more than 1,000 demographically diverse adults across the United States were polled. And here's what they found. The overwhelming majority of respondents, 88%, have encountered healthcare misinformation, and nearly three quarters, 73%, are anxious about it. More than one in three believe they come across false health information almost every day. So health misinformation, in case you haven't noticed, is growing out of control. These alleged crackdowns by social media outlets and YouTube, like, oh, we're not going to let all this, you know, misinformation out there. We're finally taking down the massive anti-vax Facebook page that should have been taken down years ago. That, by the way, that group, the Children's Health Defense, I think they made, what, $6 million last year, I think is what I had read. They make a lot of money, whether it's $6 million or not. They do make a lot of money. And they were removed because Facebook finally said, we think this is misinformation. We've got polio in New York. That's what medical misinformation does. 1 million people dead from COVID in this country. That's what medical misinformation does. But that's not even the striking part of this study from M. Booth Health. Here's the striking part to me. Separately, we also, this is from the Daily Beast, by the way. Separately, we also surveyed 101 full-time healthcare providers. Almost all, 99% of them said they have patients share misinformation every week. And 90% of medical professionals are anxious about this. Nearly half, 48%, say they now have less confidence that patients will comply with their recommendations. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the same percentage of patients, 48%, say they are now more comfortable challenging their doctor. So all of this misinformation, and there's another part to it other than just misinformation. I'll get to that in a moment. But all of this misinformation, what it's doing right now, according to doctors and healthcare workers, is you've got people walking into the doctor's office. The doctor says, okay, look, you have this problem. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. We're going to get you fixed up, hopefully, and we're going to make you better. And the patient says, now hold on there, Jack. I may not have gone to medical school, but I saw on Facebook, right, from this very important group, they've got like 10 million followers. They say you're wrong. They say give me the horse medicine. That's what I want. Maybe I should have gone to the vet instead. And the doctors, like, they can't do anything about it. They can sit there and say, well, as somebody that went to medical school and's been practicing medicine for a couple decades, you're wrong. Please do what I'm saying. And then the patient leaves and half the doctors are like, yeah, that person's not going to listen to me. Doctors are getting burnout from this, the report also states. Because you know why the burnout happens? Because when that patient that doesn't want to take the doctor's advice because they know better because they read it on Facebook, they don't listen to the doctor, they get worse, they come back. And no matter how many I told you so's the doctor gives, the patient still insists, no, I'm still right. I may be on my deathbed because I didn't listen to you, but darn it, I'm still right. Until, of course, their final moments, as we saw plenty of times during the pandemic, people on their deathbed saying, I wish I'd gotten the shot. I wish I had taken this seriously. I wish I hadn't followed the misinformation. That's what we're seeing in this country. And as I mentioned, there's another part of it too. It's not just the misinformation. It's the overwhelming amount of information. And that overwhelming amount of information I'm talking about is coming from the drug companies themselves. Another thing that's happening that's also frustrating doctors to no end is the fact that we have direct-to-consumer advertising of prescription drugs here in the United States. And what's been happening for 20 years now is that patients go into the doctor's office not waiting for the doctor to tell them what they need, but they go in and act like they're ordering at a deli. They say, hey, doc, yeah, I've got these problems, but I saw this commercial on TV. I want that drug. I want that thing. The people in the commercial looked all happy. They're dancing. I want to dance. Give me the drug. And if you think I'm making that up, go and look through all the studies from the last 20 years that have shown that people are now walking into the doctor's office demanding, give me this thing I saw on TV. Which is why we're one of only two countries on the planet, New Zealand being the other one, that even allows that to happen in the first place, the direct-to-consumer advertising. That's where we're at today. We're inundated with news from Big Pharma saying, hey, you need this drug. All these people in the commercial taking it, they look happy, they're fun, you know, they're living their lives. Don't you want to live your life? And then on the other side, you have people saying, oh no, you don't need any of this. What you need is to go out there and eat a couple of handfuls of dirt, and that'll make it all better. Don't trust Big Pharma. And so we are stuck in this in-between. I have seen, again, through my work for almost 20 years with various law firms, I've seen the documents from Big Pharma. These folks are scumbags, up and down, no question about it. They will lie to your face about a drug that is going to kill you and tell you it's the only thing you ever need to take and you're going to be great. It is difficult to trust these individuals. At the same time, they do still produce life-saving medication. So it's easy to see how you get to that misinformation. There is a lot of distrust there, and there should be. Because, again, a lot of the people, including some of the prominent anti-vaxxers, they fought these companies in court. But it skewed them to the point where they now believe you can't trust anything. The truth is somewhere in between. And unfortunately for doctors, the public doesn't know what to do. They don't know who to trust. We're just kind of left in the middle. Big Pharma's greedy. Big Pharma rips us off. Big Pharma tries to sell us drugs we don't need. But they also make things we do need, like vaccines and life-saving medications that we just wish we could afford to take. But then, all of that greed, all of those horrible documents feeds into the "you can't trust Big Pharma, they're only out to kill you" misinformation. It's a vicious cycle, and it is almost entirely a uniquely American cycle. We have to take another quick break. I am Farron Cousins. Find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Farron Cousins. I'm in for David Pakman. This is the David Pakman Show, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins, sitting in for David Pakman. And hey, if you like what you've heard from me these last 2 days, you can follow me on my two YouTube channels, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. I'm also youtube.com/FarronBalanced. And Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and if you're so inclined, TikTok, I'm at FarronBalanced. We've still got a lot to cover and not a whole lot of show left, folks, so let's get right back into it. We've got a new poll this week that I think tells us more than what the pollsters thought it was telling us. And it is this. For the first time this year, the number one issue on the minds of American voters as we head into the midterms is not the economy. It's not inflation. It's not anything having to do with their personal finances. The number one issue, or I should say the most popular issue for American voters, because it's only at 14%, but everything is lower than that, or I'm sorry, 21%, but everything else is lower than that, is threats to democracy. 21%, a plurality of voters, say the number one issue they have on their minds right now heading into the midterms are the growing threats to democracy. It's not surprising, is it? Because what I think this really tells us is the January 6th hearings have worked. That's why threats to democracy is at the forefront of everybody's brains right now. Because we are watching the threats to democracy, or at least we were over the summer, unfold on TV. Those hearings, by the way, are going to resume once again in September, which is wonderful. We need them to. You know, we kind of had like the season finale in the summer. Now we're ready for season two because they left us a lot of cliffhangers that we need resolved before the midterms. And if Republicans take back over, we kind of have to get on that quick because they're going to kill the committee. And several of the members will no longer be in Congress. Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, obviously. But 21% isn't a huge percentage, right? Because you still have other ones. 16% chose cost of living as the, you know, second most important. 14% said jobs and the economy. 57%, by the way, say the investigation into former President Donald Trump should continue. So when we see these numbers that say 21% say the threats to democracy are number one, please understand a majority of people are directly referring to Donald frickin' Trump. It's not like we're dealing with Trump supporters who think, oh, the threat to democracy of the FBI barging in on the former president and making him cry. Nope. These are people who look at Donald Trump. They look at January 6th. They look at all the investigations and, you know, criminal allegations out there. And they say, you know what? That's very concerning to me. And furthermore, knowing now that this has emerged as the biggest issue for American voters, it also helps explain why we've seen the shifts in these polls in just the last couple weeks, right? Ever since Biden was sworn in as president, all the polls already showed us Republicans are going to sweep the 2022 midterms. And it's not just the polls that were telling us that. History tells us that. Typically, when a new president takes power, if the party also controls Congress, they will lose control of Congress in the first midterms following their, you know, first year in office. That's historically what happens. It's only not happened a handful of times. So historically, it was supposed to happen. The polls were showing it was totally going to happen. And now the polls are showing that, oops, generic Democrat beats generic Republican. So sometimes we have to take all of this polling data. You know, like, for example, this stuff says, wow, a majority of voters say the threat to democracy is number one. Well, these polls show Democrats are now possibly going to win the midterms. But but you have to finish the work. You have to put the polls together. You know, my degree is in political science, and that is literally one of the things that they teach you in the political polling classes, is how to take the data from all the different polls and put it all together to extrapolate what it actually means. And unfortunately, I see too few individuals out there doing that. You can't just report on, hey, here's a new poll, blah, 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 see you later. No, you have to tie it in and make it relevant to everything. And that's what too few groups are not doing, because that's not mentioned in this story. It should be, but it's not. So brush up on your poli-sci, folks, because that's how you read polls. You don't read them individually. You read them as a part of something bigger. And hey, speaking of people who didn't do well in polls, Madison Cawthorn has been back in the news pretty much for about a week or so now, because the guy just can't stop having problems with his campaign finances. And I know that seems weird, right? Because the guy lost his primary. Obviously, he's not running for office anymore. He's a lame duck. He's going to be leaving at the end of the year. But last week it was revealed that Madison Cawthorn is a month late in filing his most recent campaign finance disclosures. We also know that in those disclosures that are still waiting to be filed, he's got thousands of dollars that he's spent at Chick-fil-A, thousands of dollars that he's spent at cigar shops, and what's some of the other? $21,000 for lodging in Florida, $3,000 at a place called Papa's Beer, and of course, hundreds of thousands of dollars in consulting fees that he's paid out to his consultants, who clearly did not do a very good job for him. But he's a month late, hadn't filed it. And now, according to a new report from the Daily Beast, we know why. Because as it turns out, according to this new report, Madison Cawthorn is out of money. The people working for his campaign said it was basically dollar in, dollar out. Guy raised millions, but he spent even more than that. Now, you may not think that's a problem, right? Haha, you ran out of money, you're not going to be reelected anyway, so you suck. It's a little bit murkier than that, though, folks. You see, there's a law. Believe it or not, we actually do still have a couple campaign finance laws out there. And one of them says that you can raise money for both your primary race and the general election race at the same time. Good. However, you cannot touch that general election money until you've won your primary. And if you don't win your primary, you have to pay all that money back to the donors who gave it to you, the general election fund. It doesn't matter what happens with your primary money. If you lose, whatever. But if you've raised money for a general election and you lose your primary, all of the general election money, by law, has to go back to the people that gave it to you. And that makes sense, right? That's actually protecting the donors, which explains why we have that law, because it protects the wealthy corporations pouring money in. Madison Cawthorn, as I said, is out of money. And he had a lot of money in his general election fund. So put two and two together and you realize that Madison Cawthorn can't afford to pay back all the money that he is supposed to be paying back. And that is according to the people who worked with his campaign that spoke to the Daily Beast. So Madison Cawthorn's in a lot of trouble here. He's going to have to come up possibly with millions of dollars to return to his donors. And that likely, again, we can't say for certain, but it is likely why he hasn't gone ahead and filed his campaign finance disclosures, because it would show that he spent all the money that he's legally not allowed to spend. So in addition to no longer being in Congress, he may no longer be a free man if he continues to spend money so frivolously that he's legally not allowed to touch. If he does have any money left over, I'd say it's time to spend that on a good lawyer. And finally today, again, folks, I am so sorry we are running out of time, but I do have one more thing I want to talk about here, and that is South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. Kristi Noem, an ethics board this week in South Dakota, said that it's likely, they said, that she engaged in misconduct with regard to her daughter's real estate appraiser's license. This is a weird, weird story, because it also involves a Republican attorney general who had to resign in disgrace after he ran over somebody. But this Republican attorney general at one point was hot on Noam's trail, working on this case, you know, until he pretty much killed somebody and had to leave office. It's not funny that somebody died. It's just funny that these Republicans in South Dakota are so screwed up. But anyway, what had happened was that Kristi Noem's daughter a couple years ago, Cassidy Peters, wanted to become a real estate appraiser. But you got to have a license in South Dakota to do that. So she applies, she takes the tests, all of this, and they look at it and they say, nah, you can't have your real estate appraiser's license. But mommy was the governor. So what Kristi Noem did was she called a meeting, and she called a meeting with the state employee who ran the agency that gives those licenses, the woman's direct supervisor, and the state labor secretary. And for some reason, even though she's not a part of the government, Cassidy Peters, Noem's daughter, was also involved in that meeting. 4 months after that meeting, magically, Kristi Noem's daughter gets that real estate license or real estate appraiser's license. And then they also fired the individual who had originally denied her the license. We do not know. I mean, we don't know for certain what happened in that meeting. We obviously see the outcomes. The person who denied the license loses her job. They then pay her $200,000 to not file a discrimination suit against them. And Cassidy Peters gets her real estate appraiser's license. Everybody goes home happy, right? And so this ethics board in South Dakota says, we think, you know, it's likely that she engaged in misconduct. Likely. The issue is not over, but unfortunately, we are out of time. But I think I got all that we know so far. But anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. We got a great bonus show coming up for everybody, including Rick Scott leaving the country right as Republicans want answers about where all their money went. I am Farron Cousins. I've been in for David Pakman. You can find me at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire, youtube.com/FarronBalanced, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, @FarronBalanced. This is the David Pakman Show. Thanks for...
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-song word.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because Why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
RCT, in sound, from way out.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We will forgive $10,000 in outstanding federal student loans. In addition, students who come from low-income families, which allowed them to qualify to receive a Pell Grant, will have their debt reduced 20 $10,000.
President Biden announces a student debt relief plan that could help as many as 40 million borrowers. Republicans decry the plan as student debt socialism, while many debt relief advocates say Biden's plan doesn't go far enough. We'll speak to Astra Taylor of the Debt Collective, who's just directed a new documentary short titled Freedom Dreams, Black Women and the Student Debt Crisis.
The Debt Collective, which has been fighting for full cancellation, of course, doesn't think this is enough. But we know that this is a major milestone on the path to full student debt cancellation and transforming the way higher education is funded in this country.
Then we go to Oklahoma, where the state is set to execute James Coddington, the first of 25 executions scheduled by Oklahoma over the next 2 years. We'll speak to Connie Johnson of the Oklahoma Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, as well as Sister Helen Prejean, author of Dead Man Walking.
We have a terrible situation going on now. All the killings have been terrible by the state of human beings. But we have a man right now, James Coddington, who's in the torture chamber. It's all stone chamber in Oklahoma, where he was put 35 days ago to await his coming execution.
And we look at how an ultra secretive Chicago industrial mogul has quietly given $1.6 billion to the architect of the right wing takeover of the courts. It's the largest known political advocacy donation in U.S. history. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden's announced plans to cancel as much as $20,000 in student debt to help as many as 40 million borrowers. Response to Biden's student debt cancellation plan has been mixed across the political spectrum. Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders hailed the plan as a big deal, but added, quote, "We have got to do more." Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell condemned Biden's plan as student loan socialism. Meanwhile, many student debtors who owe far more than the $20,000 say Biden's plan doesn't go far enough. This is the artist and writer Maddie Clifford of the Debt Collective, who holds about $100,000 in student loan debt.
Biden's announcement means that we need to continue to apply pressure because it's great that he's made that decision and he's made the right decision and he's going in the right direction. But also, as people, we don't have to accept crumbs.
After headlines, we'll hear more from members of the Debt Collective on the Biden administration's student loan forgiveness plan. A federal judge has blocked portions of Idaho's trigger ban on abortion from taking effect. On Wednesday, District Judge B. Lynn Windmill struck down a provision of Idaho's law, making it a crime for a doctor to provide abortion care to a pregnant person facing medical emergency. Federal law requires hospitals participating in Medicare to provide abortions when a person's life is at risk. The remainder of Idaho's near-total abortion ban takes effect today, the same day that trigger bans on abortion affecting millions of people also go into effect in Texas and Tennessee. 2 months after the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade, 1 in 3 U.S. women don't have access to abortion in their states. In Ukraine, at least 25 people were killed and more than 30 others injured Wednesday as an explosion ripped through a train station in the east. 2 children were among the dead. Russia's defense ministry confirmed the missile attack, but said only Ukraine